You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest ever Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today's episode of the show is going to be a player review episode on Wilson Chandler and then on Malik Beasley at the end. I have some notes on him. I didn't want to do a full review of Malik Beasley's season because, quite frankly, there's just not a whole lot to talk about. So what I'll do is in block one, I'll talk about Wilson's strengths. In block two, I'll talk about the weaknesses and also talk about the interesting situation he finds himself in this summer with his extension and what it would mean for him to come back. And then also some other little loose notes about him. And then I'll wrap up by talking about Malik Beasley and sort of where do the Nuggets go from here with him, because I think he's also a player that I kind of have my eye on this summer to kind of see what's going to happen with him. A lot of interesting kind of questions there, so I'll talk about all of those. But to get started, Wilson Chandler, I thought for some reason I had thought I had already done one on Wilson, but I had not, so wanted to get to him. It'll probably be the last player review that I do of this type. I want to talk about Trey Lyles and Juancho Hernangómez both on the next, this week. I'll probably wrap up this week by talking about both of those players. But I want to look at them, approach them from a little bit of a different angle. Rather than, like, especially Juancho, who's in Malik Beasley's same boat, rather than talk about what kind of year he had, I more want to talk about just kind of how I view them and what my opinion of is both of them as players, their fit, and how I would sort of handle them, how much to invest in them and how much to rely on both of those players. But let's start with Wilson Chandler, because he was a huge part of this roster this season. Starter, occupied, really was the only true small forward on the entire Nuggets roster. So I think he had value outside of just what he was as a player and what kind of what he produced. He had value in that he was the only guy on the Nuggets roster who was, that size, that both height and size, and could guard players of similar height and sizes. So he was Denver's defensive sort of linchpin in a lot of ways, because they just didn't have guys that could guard your LeBrons and your Paul Georges and that type of player. He was part of, this is what, I know Wilson is a polarizing player. I'm higher on him than I think most people are, and I totally understand all of the different reasons why. I think this was among one of his worst seasons that he's had, so there's a lot of sort of the weaknesses column to go over. But he was part of the eighth best five-man lineup in the NBA this season. The Denver Nuggets starting lineup that featured Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Wilson Chandler, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic had a plus 9.8 net rating in like 480 minutes or something like that. Of everybody that played all five-man units, not just starters, but all five-man units that played at least that many minutes or more, that was the eighth best in the entire NBA. So you think of all the different starting lineups, then you go to Golden State and Philadelphia and Boston, who have these closing lineups that, their starters, they stagger some of their best lineups because they don't necessarily want to, they want to have like a strong bench, but they close with certain lineups. Out of all of those, Denver had the eighth best five-man lineup, and it included Wilson Chandler. I think when you just look at, and I don't think you should look at basketball this way, but if you just looked at, okay, what does a five-man lineup, and in particular starting five-man lineup, what are the little boxes it all has to check, those five guys all have to check, and you have to have some rebounding, some defense, some shooting, a little bit of some ball handling, playmaking, all those different things. I think when you look at Murray and Harris, elite shooting from those two positions. You're going to get elite floor spacing from both of those guys. Millsap and Jokic, you get a lot of playmaking, and you get a lot of rebounding and defense, and you kind of stretch the court because those guys are able to do that. You got guys that could put the ball on the floor, and Murray, Jokic, even Millsap, Gary, I mean, really all of the guys, and can pass. I think Wilson is a guy who grades out as sort of a B- in every category. He's not a great shooter, but he's not a bad one. He can knock it down if you leave him open. He's not a great like playmaker passer, but he can do it. Like he's in position, he can do it. He's a pretty good rebounder for a small forward. I think he's more of a power forward than a small forward, and I'll talk about that here in a second. But he's very good rebounder for that position. Not a great defender, but a good one. So he kind of like, if you just graded every skill set, he's pretty much a B minus in a lot of different roles, maybe C plus, B minus, somewhere right in there. He had some monster defensive games for the Nuggets. Oh, and the reason I brought all that up, by the way, about the B minus C plus thing is I think Murray, Harris, Millsap, and Jokic are all guys that have A plus skill sets in a lot of categories. They have some like F minuses. They all have weaknesses to their games. But you have a lot of guys that have this really, really high level thing. So I do wonder if in some part that small forward position, and even to a lesser extent, the power forward position needs to be more of a jack of all trades type guy. I think there's an argument to be made that you kind of need one of those types of guys, at least with that skill set. I'm not saying the performance that Wilson had, but just with the skill set of he's not the guy you're relying on very heavily for high usage. He had some monster defensive games this season. Wasn't very consistent, I don't think, on the defensive end. He had some bad games, some bad stretches, bad weeks. But he did have some just monster defensive ones, I think, more often than not. And did an underrated job, I think, defensively on a lot of some of the players that, again, Denver just didn't have another option. If it weren't for him, I don't know who they would have gone to. He's another positive. He's Nikola Jokic's closest friend. As far as I can tell on the roster, I don't know this for a fact, probably Nikola Jokic's closest friend and his locker mate. Their lockers are right next to each other. Jokic always talks about him and kind of makes little jokes about Wilson and, you know, kind of always like is insulting him through the press and things like that, to which Wilson, true to form, never kind of cracks or smiles or anything. Like Jokic will say something about, oh, Wilson, really bad tonight, almost lost the game for us, and then kind of look over him and Wilson will just like ignore him completely. So they have a weird relationship there. I saw on Instagram earlier this week, Wilson and Timofey Mozgov chatting it up and talking about trying to go on vacation together with Jokic. And I just thought that stuff like that is kind of cool to see. And I think with Jokic, you know, his three closest friends the four closest friends that I think he has in the roster. Again, I'm not certain of any of this stuff. I'm really speculating on this, but from what I observed from being in the locker room, his closest friends were Mike Miller, probably number one, Jameer Nelson and Wilson Chandler, number two, with Will Barton shortly, you know, probably in that same mix. You look at it, there's a chance all four of those guys could be gone next season, and I wonder about that sometimes. I think losing Jameer and Mike Miller this season, you know, between last season and this one, I think had a little bit of an effect on Nikola Jokic, and I think that was hard for him to see those guys go, especially Mike Miller, who I think he loves like a brother. So, you know, it's interesting to think about Wilson and Barton both possibly being out of the lineup next year or just off of the team. He had a nice run immediately after the All-Star break, Wilson Chandler did, kind of out of nowhere. I think that month of February, you look at his stats, February and March were his two best months by a mile. One of the things I believe about Wilson, this is both a compliment and a knock on him. I think he is a really, really, really smart player in terms of like spacing the floor, knows when to cut, stays in his lane, doesn't like to take bad shots or force. You know, he kind of knows how to play within the flow of the offense. Him and Jokic have a nice two-man game together on give and goes and post-ups and things like that. They kind of just seem to understand each other. The difference is, and I've talked about this with Jokic, where I think he was a guy when the ball was popping and they were playing Jokic ball, Jokic just comes to life and he looks like Larry Bird. When they weren't, you know, Jokic doesn't look all 100% like himself. And that's one of the big transformations I think Jokic made this season. I've talked about this, was he's figured out that even when things aren't going right, he realizes he can enforce his will in a variety of different ways. It doesn't have to be Jokic ball. He can be aggressive. I think Wilson is not that way, and this is maybe the biggest knock on him. I think when the ball is popping, he is a guy that can fit in very, very seamlessly, get the ball moving, be in the right spots at the right time, make the right play, right reads, and all of this. And I think that's part of why, after that All-Star break, the month of February, when he moved to the power forward position, but more importantly, because Plumlee and Millsap were not healthy and everybody was just relying on Jokic to kind of be the fulcrum, I don't think it's a coincidence that Wilson played so well. A lot of people chalk that up to, oh, well, the trade deadline passed and now he's come back to life. And maybe that's it. I do think that probably played a part in it. But I think an underrated and maybe even more important aspect of it was the Nuggets started playing Jokic ball. And I think he's very good at Jokic ball. Like Plumlee, he took more shots at the rim this year than last. So we went through everybody on the roster, and also I think this applies to some of the guys, or actually just to Trey Lyles as well. But no, actually it doesn't apply to Trey Lyles. So the five guys that were here last year, Barton, Murray, Harris, Jokic, those four guys, all took significantly less shots at the rim, or fewer shots at the rim, while Plumlee and Wilson took more shots at the rim. Again, I think that's kind of a sign of an unhealthy offense when two of your the least important offensive weapons were getting more shots at the rim while everybody else was getting less. I think that pointed to a clogged lane. Oh, by the way, he took the most shots from 3 to 10 feet of his career. I have another note in here about that. So just like everybody else on the roster, it seems like they got a lot of shots right outside the restricted area. They weren't getting all the way to the cup, but they were getting into the painted area, just not that floater zone, or, you know, sort of short shot zone. So while Wilson was getting to the rim, he also was getting to that floater zone more, which I don't think is a good thing for the Nuggets as a whole. On to the weaknesses. The lowest usage of his career, which I think everybody that watched saw that, or this does not surprise anybody. He really had a passive year. I think he was more passive than he's ever been, and a lot of that is, I think he's sort of a passive player. He always kind of just does. He's not a guy that ever looks intense. You know, defensively, he's had some big plays throughout his career. He's had some monster dunks, but he just kind of always just glides through the court. Well, I think this was the year that, more so than ever, you know, 48 minutes in that last game and did not score a basket. Stuff like that, just, I know he did a lot of other things in that game, but I think there were a lot of moments like that throughout the season where the Nuggets sort of needed him to press, and he didn't press. He had half as many dunks as last year, which again goes back to, so he took more shots at the rim but had fewer dunks, which is kind of interesting. And he just wasn't attacking the basket. I do think a lot of this stems from the fact that at this stage in his career, and with the way that the league has evolved, he is not a small forward anymore. I don't think he's a very good one. When you play with two bigs in particular, and that's what the Nuggets decided to do this year, when you play with Mason Plumlee and Nikola Jokic, or Mason Plumlee and Millsap, or Millsap and Jokic, your spacing, I think there's ways to space the court better. I've talked about this, but the Nuggets just didn't have it this year. And when you add Wilson to that third spot in the front court, I think it even amplifies some of the issues that you have with that. You know, if you swap Will Barton out there and then you have like the Plumlee Jokic lineups, I think it actually works. If you put Wilson in there, and he's sort of that lower 33-34% three-point shooter who's also a reluctant three-point shooter, has kind of a slow release. He's more deliberate in the type of shots he takes and the type of shots he doesn't take. I just think that clogs the lane and causes some issues. So for one, I think he's playing out of position. For two, the style of play didn't really suit him. And again, these aren't things that are, I'm not trying to take off the burden of responsibility for him. I think this is who he is in his career, and he has kind of proven that he is not the type of player that can adapt, at least offensively from a scoring role. I don't think he can adapt, and so he kind of is what he is in that regard. Going forward, you know, he has a player option, and you're making $13 million next year, and then will be an unrestricted free agent. The question for him, and I don't think it's that tough of a question, quite frankly, he's had a lot of injuries in his career. If he were to opt out of that deal, he could test unrestricted free agency, of which I think this will be a frugal market this summer. I don't think teams will be spending a whole lot of money. But he might be able to get to snag like a three-year $20 million deal, three-year $22 million deal, something like that, where he can get the years. Somebody might look at him and say, hey, you know, he'd like this style of play. He'd fit in here. He is tall. Like the idea of Wilson Chandler, the idealized version of Wilson Chandler, is this super great, important player. The problem is he just so rarely is that idea. I mean, we know this from watching him so much that he so rarely reaches those heights. But he is a 6'8", 6'9", athletic, strong, mobile guy who can guard multiple positions. And if you're a team, you know, maybe like the Oklahoma City Thunder, even Golden State Warriors, you know, teams like this, I think they really would value what he brings in a very, very limited role. And I think he would fit into really both of those systems, Philadelphia, even teams like that. So maybe one of the questions he has is, and no, I don't think any of us really know what Wilson Chandler's thinking. I think he's maybe one of the hardest people in the NBA to kind of read in that regard. But he might look at it and say, you know, a championship is really important to me. I want to win a championship. And he could go sign in Golden State. I think he would play 15 to 20 minutes per game, be involved in some really big moments, play some great basketball, and he can fill the niche. They don't care if he's passive or regressive or not, because his role would be so sort of simplified. And like I said, when the ball's popping, he knows what to do. He knows when to cut, screen, all this stuff. He's great. He's one of the things I love about him is on the weak side, he's so good at knowing when to sort of, you know, set that exchange or when to kind of drag his defender out of the lane just to get them moving in the wrong direction, because he anticipates what's going to happen on the other end. So maybe a championship's important to him and he makes that decision. Maybe longevity is important to him and he opts out to get a bigger deal. What I suspect is the case, because he's had injury concerns, my guess is he's just going to go into this season, say, I'm going to take my player option. It's $13 million guaranteed. And he will have extra motivation to make it through the season uninjured. And I think if you're a Nuggets fan and if you're the Nuggets front office, you look at that and think, okay, if Wilson opts in, what Wilson are we getting? Are we getting the same Wilson as this season, 2017-18, or even worse because he's more cautious, less willing to attack the rim, fewer dunks, less putting his body on the line? I think that would be a really bad scenario for him if he opts in, but he's sort of committed to the run the Nuggets have and he wants to see this thing through. You know, and the Nuggets go back to Jokic ball. I think, you know, the Nuggets can survive that, and I think he can be very, very valuable. You know, if you get the best offensive version of Wilson plus the best defensive version, it's a really good player. I just don't think too many people have confidence that you will get that, you know, going forward too frequently. So those are kind of the scenarios. I anticipate he will opt in. I also anticipate that he will be involved in a lot of trade rumors. Him and Kenneth Faried, I think the best scenario for the Nuggets financially is to get off of both of those players. Best scenario is to get off of Darrell Arthur's too, but that I just don't think that's going to happen. There's much less of a market for him, and he's making it so much money that he's basically an end-of-bench kind of towel-waving guy at this point. But there is a possibility they get rid of Faried and Wilson. They have to pay a price for it. But what would that price be, and are they able to do it? If they are able to shed both of those salaries, whether they include players like Malik Beasley or Tyler Lydon, maybe a draft pick or two, you know, maybe they can get off of that money and then they can enter into free agency a little bit more flexible. They could sign Barton and Jokic and maybe add, you know, one other piece, a backup point guard or whatever. So that'll be, I think he's sort of the linchpin in a lot of the Nuggets' plans this summer, is to kind of see what direction he's going and to see if he does opt in, what does the market look like for him. But I do anticipate that, especially at the trade deadline, if he's in a Nuggets jersey, I think there'll be a lot of people interested, because he's a guy that if you only need him for 2 months, he might be the piece if you're trying to make a playoff push that can play 10 to 15 minutes a game and be. On to Malik Beasley, because he's an interesting case, and I just alluded to him in a trade scenario. It's been 2 years with Malik Beasley, and I'm still not sure what kind of player he is or what his upside is. I don't feel like I have a great read on him. I do feel like I have a great read on certain important aspects of his game and just like where he is in the process. I think he's still a project. I still look at him almost like I would look at... I look at him the exact same way I looked at him coming into this season. A guy that basically sat the bench his rookie season, and now it's like, okay, where are you at? Well, this year I feel the exact same way. I'm still like, okay, he needs a lot of experience, and he needs an identity, and he needs some focus, but where is he at? I think player development in your first 2 years are so critical. Players, really your first like 4 or 5 years, after that, you know, you're refining the edges. You don't see a whole lot of players completely reinventing themselves at 24, 25. There are cases, but I think by and large, most players sort of mold themselves into the player they are going to become in those first 4 or 5 years. I think 2 years in, I have no idea what Malik Beasley is being molded into, either by, you know, self-directed. I don't know what he's trying to become, and I don't know what the coaching staff is trying to mold him into. And he is not a Will Barton replacement. I get a lot of this on Twitter, and I think it's absolutely insane. You know, every now and then I get opinions from people, and I love when people share the opinions. I'm saying this now, but I always see crazy opinions. People say, you know, Malik Beasley will just slide into Barton's role. Barton was one of the four or five most important players on the Nuggets roster this year. He was hot and cold. He did some bad stuff, but he won a lot of games, and he was a huge, huge, huge piece of what the Nuggets were and what their identity was this season. Malik Beasley's not that. He doesn't have the playmaking skills. He doesn't have the shot. He doesn't have the feel for the game and the understanding of who he is and what he's supposed to be in the way that Will Barton does. And he would absolutely, if Will Barton went somewhere else, which I think there's a good chance of that, Malik Beasley is not going to have that role. He'll have a different role on the Nuggets roster next season. And quite frankly, he'd probably be behind guys like Torrey Craig. His strengths, he's athletic. I mean, I started to do strengths and weaknesses, but the truth is, this reads more like a NBA draft profile than the rest of these, and that's, again, because we just haven't seen enough. He is very athletic, probably the most athletic guy on the team outside of Kenneth Faried. His three-point shot looks good. He only shot 34% on very low attempts. I think there wasn't enough to really draw a whole lot from, and his shots come so infrequently that I think it's tough to judge him. I do know that he had the record this season for most, like, they keep stats in some of their shooting drills at practice and stuff, and he put on his Instagram account once that he was knocking off Gary Harris for best mark of the season. And he plays really hard. I think he's a good kid with a good head on his shoulders and raised really well and all of those things, and he plays hard. When he's on the court, he gives it his all. His weaknesses, I mentioned this before, he doesn't seem to know what his role is or what is expected of him. He has really, really bad shot selection. Me and my colleague Harrison Wind over at BSN Denver joke about it all the time, where you can always tell when he's going to shoot the ball when he touches it, and quite frequently it's whenever he touches it in the front in the half court on a break, he'll take up it'll be like a 3-on-1 and he'll do a pull-up 3-point shot, or he just seems to always have that green light in his head. And I don't think it's a bad thing. Like, I think in his mind he is being aggressive. Again, I talk about this word aggressive all the time and why I don't like it, as I feel like it really is misleading in a lot of different ways. I think Beasley in his mind thinks, I've always got to be aggressive. And what happens is he ends up taking really stupid shots and kind of kills the flow of the offense quite a bit. And then I mentioned this earlier, I think defensively he has kind of a short attention span. And part of this is he's thinking the game so much. I think he's been taught so many different rules and he's so many fundamentals of the game that when he's out there, he's always thinking. But sometimes that thinking turns into him thinking and not reacting to the game, and he becomes a step slow. His best path to an NBA rotation, it honestly is probably through defense first and foremost, which he's not a great enough defender now. But I think if he came into next season thinking, okay, if Torrey Craig made the lineup with less offensive skill than I do, but he just makes it through hustle, understanding the angles and defense, you know, maybe he can try to become his equal in that regard. But also his understanding of the game. I think this offseason needs to be an education in basketball for him. I always see these players in the NBA with their trainers working on the craziest stuff. And admittedly, I don't know anything about player development training, or I don't know much, at least at the NBA level. I used to train a lot of players at the high school level. I don't know a whole lot about the NBA. It's not even comparable. But for him, what I do see with a lot of, like, the Drew Hanlon, who trains a lot of your high profile players in the NBA, what I see is a lot of, you know, he trains them all the exact same way. We're going to work on our three dribble step back move right now. Most players in the NBA don't need that. And Myers Leonard is one of the guys he works on. He worked on Myers Leonard, all these like dribble drive moves from the perimeter. Myers Leonard had like two or three dribble drives the entire season. Sometimes you have to understand that your path to the NBA is first through a role player. And right now, Malik Beasley is not a star in the making. He is a role player in the making. And some of that is going to have to come with just understanding the fundamentals of his type of player and how to make that work. The angles for dribble handoffs, the timing for when to crash the offensive glass, when not to, when to get back. All of these things, like these little details about basketball IQ, I think that's where he is most lacking. That's where he needs the most attention. He knows how to spot up shoot. He needs to know when to spot up to shoot. He knows how to dribble and attack the rim and dunk. He needs to learn when to do those things, and I think that's where most of his development will come. And lastly, I do suspect that he is a guy that we will see pop up in trade rumors. I have heard through the grapevine, through different teams and just talking to people around the league, that he does have some trade value. There's some people out there that are interested in Malik Beasley. You know, Will Barton didn't get off the bench in Portland, and I think a lot of people try. One of the markets out there is to kind of scour the end of bench young prospects who just didn't work out, and maybe it'll be a better fit for the Nuggets. That worked out for Will Barton. There might be another team out there that says, you know what, we know how to. I think we have a use for this guy, and we have the resources and time to put into him and a spot on the roster to put into him to kind of invest and let him grow. So there might be a market for him. And if it costs Malik Beasley to get rid of Kenneth Faried's salary, I would not even blink. To me, that's an absolute slam dunk, because not only does it help you to re-sign Barton, who would be ahead of Malik Beasley on the depth chart anyway, I just don't see where Malik Beasley is going to play and be impactful on the Nuggets roster. So losing him, it's really like losing a sunk cost. It's not something that's going to pain you. I think the same thing would be true for me with Wilson Chandler if it was a deal. You know, okay, they can move Wilson Chandler's contract and also with Malik Beasley. I think that's fine, again, because the odds of the player you draft this year at pick number 14, the odds of them being as good as Malik Beasley are pretty good, probably as good as 50-50 or better, given that he doesn't have a role in this roster. So I say all that to say I like Beasley. I just don't know that he's ever going to get his great shot here in Denver, and I would not be surprised at all if he was involved in trade rumors, and I'd not be surprised at all if he was not on the Nuggets roster ending training camp next season. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Like I said, I want to talk about Wancho and Trey Lyles to round out the week. So looking forward to those. We'll have them to you later this week.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.